Hello and welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. My name is Still Paul Madat. Thanks very much for joining us today. Really excited about this episode. Today I have Paul B. He is VP of Ticket Sales from the Milwaukee Bucks, coming to us from the association. Mr. B, how are things, man?
Things are good. It's a beautiful Friday here in Milwaukee, and hopefully trying to keep time together, make it pass quickly, because we got a big game tonight that hopefully could turn some things around.
So yeah, you do. Big game. Well, listen, say hi to everybody and provide a quick intro, and then we'll get into your story.
All right. Hello, guys. Paul B with the Bucks. As Paul just said, happy to be here and be part of this podcast. I am a proud father of two, a one-year-old and a five-year-old, and a beautiful wife, Crystal. Been here in Milwaukee for about 2.5 years. Prior to that, was with the Detroit Red Wings and Olympia Entertainment in Detroit for 7 years. I helped walk in the Little Caesars Arena after working for a few years in Joe Louis Arena. Then started their career with the Cleveland Cavaliers in inside sales and got a chance to move up from there. So been around the Midwest majority of my life. Hoops junkie, basketball fanatic, and just excited that I get to be able to work in the league and keep working for my passion.
Okay, well, Paul, listen, I'm excited for you to be on this episode. And the reason why I reached out to you, I was pretty intentional about it because of something that you wrote on LinkedIn. It was about a week ago or so now, just over, where the Milwaukee Bucks drew a line in the sand and they decided to forfeit a game because of what was happening in the world with social injustice. And you wrote something that came across to me as a really proud moment to you. So I want to talk to you about, tell me and everybody here, talk to me about 2020 in terms of how it's been for you personally, but also professionally.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So 2020, I mean, there's a lot of obvious hits that we've all kind of been enduring over the past 6 months. And obviously first being COVID, the pandemic, that was something that, in my wildest dreams, I couldn't imagine would be in our world right now. It's something that we're faced with every day. I remember the day very vividly, March 12th, getting the call saying, just send the reps home.
Yeah.
There's so much mystery and nobody really understood what this was. So I think just the protection, and now that I have a family and trying to make sure that they're good, make sure my parents are good, because I have family members that are higher risk, and then going through that. Truthfully, I think a lot of people, myself included, thought we'd be back in June, July at the latest, right? But then it just continued and then escalated. And then a few months in, you have George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery start to kick in, which was devastating, right? And as a black man working, in sports and being professional, I've always been aware of these things. And I think a lot of people, minorities especially, have always been aware that these are occurrences that happen, more frequently than anybody would want. But then when those two men lost their lives in particular, I think that's when it really hit me pretty aggressively. And it was at that moment, to go back to talking about my president, Peter, somehow we had another call set up that day. Actually, no, we didn't. This is what happened. I remember now. He had sent the first company statement from the Bucks talking about George Floyd, the social injustice, and what the stance of the company was. And truth be told, Paul, I was a couple of days away from, getting pretty upset. Like, I went through every wave of emotion you can imagine during that first week. When George Floyd lost his life. And to see that, I emailed him quickly. I said, hey, listen, I appreciate you sending it. I needed to see this. We needed to see this. And then he called me within 30 seconds. And we had a good discussion for, I think 10, 15 minutes. And, to want to have bosses that care about us as individuals and having that passion, knowing that regardless of what your political views and things in life, it's what's good for human beings. Be a decent human being, care about human life. And that's what really came across to me. And I kind of felt that, and I knew that we have a company that kind of feels that way, but to have them back that up and put it public, and hear him say, and hear my boss say, Jamie Morningstar, that we are taking a stand, we are not going to be quiet about this, really hit me in a special way. And to have that and know that, a lot of companies are talking the talk, a lot of companies are saying the right things and creating these diversity and inclusion groups, to have a company that's actually backing that up and doing everything they can, to make sure that we're trying to do some things has really been very moving for me, and really just quantifies that my family made the right decision. Because when we left Detroit, that was a hard decision for us because my wife's from the Detroit area, mm-hmm. you know, been around Michigan on the east side her whole life, and never done that before. She had a fantastic job. We had family everywhere, but to uproot her for the first time, bring our daughter at the time is all we had here to Milwaukee, and on a whim, and really putting in trust in who I work for. It's just been awesome to come full circle and knowing that as tragic as the events are, we have a company, an organization, ownership all the way down that believes that, you know what, there's some simple truths that we believe in that we're going to stand for, and you know, business can wait.
You know, Paul, I appreciate your honesty and your transparency in this conversation, because, you know, I've struggled with 2020 on a number of different levels, and COVID was one thing, but, you know, able to pivot and everything's fine. My wife's a nurse and we had to figure that out as well. And with our two kids in 6 and 4, but I have to say, I struggled with Black Lives Matter, not so much with the movement, of course, but I've struggled with, is it even appropriate for me to even be speaking about it? Because, you know, I'm white, I'm Canadian, and I don't pretend to know what Black Lives Matter is in terms of living, as we were talking about before I even hit record here, that no one's ever looked at me like I'm 5'7", like I'm nothing. Like no one ever sees me and fears me because of the color of my skin or how I look. And I've struggled with it because I get the movement, I fully support it, but I've also struggled, I have to say, with the demonization of police as well. Overall, because my best man at my wedding, my best friend in the world for the longest time, is a police officer in Toronto, and he's exactly what the dictionary might show what a police officer would look like if the dictionary was 50 years ago. He's white, yeah. 6'4", 250 plus. He's Irish, and he is the least racist person out there that I know. He's so anti-racism, and yet the police are being demonized here. So I've kind of struggled with both sides of it, I have to say. But I'm curious about where you're coming from with this, with the Bucks and their decision to forfeit the game and really hang in there and say, okay, enough is enough here. How was that day for you overall? Was that, did you know in advance, or how early did you know that they were going to not show up or not get on the court?
Yeah, no, I didn't have much heads up about it at all. I actually had the pregame broadcast on the television. I had a call set up with Peter that day. It was being delayed and eventually canceled for obvious reasons. So I had no idea. I think there might have been people in the organization that had heard rumblings that this was going on, but my guess is that was a pretty high level. Like myself, my boss, our reps, I don't think really had an idea this is going to be a thing. And then once they officially didn't take the court, it was obviously pretty quick, swift action from there. But yeah, I was just sitting here and watching it. And, you know, as the broadcast continued, you know, there was no game. You know, our guys, Marcus and Jim and Zora, like they did an absolutely fantastic job of dictating and narrating the story of what was going on. There were some personal narratives coming from them. There was some real emotion coming out of them. And that was, in my opinion, and I haven't, you know, heard all their broadcasts and anything, but it was probably one of the proudest moments they probably had as well. And I shot them emails during it. It's like, this is great. You guys did a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. And really speaking to what this is, because, you know, I don't know how much you might have read in that post I put in LinkedIn there, but majority is overwhelming, you know, approval, and people are proud and happy that we did that. But along with the good, you know, comes the hate and the mean, and, you know, people that just have crazy points of views for a delayed basketball game or forfeited basketball game or a team going on strike, which is pretty insane. And just goes to remind me, you know, over the past couple of months, almost every day, that even though we've come so far, as Black people, we're still nowhere where we need to be. But that day, it you know, I was very happy. And honestly, like I told you in the beginning of the podcast, I'm a hoops junkie. Like I want basketball, I need basketball. When it came back in the bubble, I was like, all right, now I feel there's some normal going on in my life again. But that day, you know, for the first time in my life, I was like, you know what? If we forfeit the game, we lose the rest of the playoffs. Like I personally was okay with it, because I knew there's other things that need to be taken care of. And basketball today, basketball this summer, like it really isn't, you know, the most important thing. We have some other things we got to take care of first.
Yeah, you know what? I think if I look at the positives out of 2020, there have been some really good positives where people have really shifted their mindset regarding, well, what truly is important here and what isn't in terms of how we engage with each other. And I have to say, you know, I don't really understand racism. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't get it. I mean, so a bunch of people 200-300 years ago got together and thought, well, let's just own a bunch of people and let's do it that way. And that was the way it should be, where no one on this planet today was even alive then. And so to me, it's a learned behavior. It comes from the home. It comes from the, you have to be taught how to be racist. So it doesn't register with me at all. I don't get it. I don't understand why anybody would think that way at all, quite frankly, just because it was done 300 years ago. It was a stupid thing then. It's a stupid thing now. But I'm curious about something, Paul, from your perspective. Are you surprised at how much resistance there is to the protest and how politicized this has really become?
Overall, I would say no. It did surprise me how much, you know, the political world kind of started to play into it and how strong. And honestly, I keep telling people it's kind of the perfect storm of mess where you got the pandemic, people at home more than ever before, being able to pay attention to things more than ever before. Then you've got the racial injustice issues that are going on. And then you also got this political race that, you know, I've only been alive 36 years, but as far as I can remember, might be one of the most controversial political runs ever. Yeah. And it's all at a boiling point where it's just amplifying everybody's inner thoughts, inner feelings, what they've been taught, what they learned when they were younger. I'm bringing a lot of that to the surface. So I'm not really surprised on how much, you know, people are against the movement. It's one of those things that me as a Black man, I've kind of felt in different ways throughout my whole life, never this level, never this, I guess, blatant, if that makes sense. And I think it just at the height of everything, the emotions that everybody's kind of on that level 10 of just, you know, anything can trigger you in one way or the other. And that is talked about literally all day, every day, because people aren't working and doing their normal or what used to be their normal day-to-day routines. I think just everything just gets to be amplified more. Yeah. So if you're against the movement, you're going to feel a little more anger, hatred, disagree, whatever that narrative is from that point of view, but it gets amplified. If you're for it, now you have time to make sure you're posting more, you're commenting more, you're talking to more people. You're putting, you know, more narratives around what your life believes, and what your mind believes in your heart. So I think that because of that perfect storm of just an insane year, you know, we keep saying it's, yeah, I think that's where a lot of this stuff is really coming to the surface. And I think, honestly, you know, as hopefully things change and change gets to be sustainable and we're making a difference, once the political run is done in November, I do think that it will be, in my opinion, I think people will be more open to conversation. It won't be tight because of your political stance and who your candidate is and whatnot. So I think things will continue to progress. It's been a beautiful thing how much things have happened and how people are doing the peaceful protests and things. Like, it's been very powerful for me to see that it's not just, you know, in Minneapolis, it wasn't just here in Kenosha or here in Milwaukee, but the world. Like, there were massive amounts of support and waves of people just saying, you know, enough's enough. We have to do better. And those are things that, you know, I look at personally, say, you know what? Even though we try, sometimes the bad is all we hear and the bad is what's hitting us in the face. And when men are dying from the hands of police officers, like I know there's majority of good police officers in the world. I 100% agree that. But the ones that aren't are the ones that, you know, aren't trained properly or the ones that are taking things over. That's what people don't see unless you live this life. And I can't say I've ever been, you know, I guess overly aggressive from a police officer before. But I do know how it feels for unconscious bias and things that, you know, like you were saying yourself, like you never have to think about. Like, I'm 6'5". You know, if anybody knows me, it takes a whole lot to even get any kind of emotion out of me other than like, okay, like you're just being crazy. But, you know, when I run around the neighborhood, you know, early in the morning, I get up around 5:30. Now it's starting to get dark. Like, I want to make sure I'm wearing brighter clothes because even just startling somebody, just running by them, you never know what it's going to cause. So it's surprised, but not surprised. But, you know, knowing what the world is right now, I would expect, you know, the levels of emotion from all different aspects right now.
Well, you know, I have a belief that 2020 in the end, in the history books, is going to be looked upon as a positive year. Change is going to come on a lot of different levels. The environment seems to be getting cleaned up. We seem to be engaging with each other differently and just our chain of thought. And of course, obviously with social injustice and how we just how we look at each other as all human beings on this planet. I think it's going to be positive. Right now, not so positive. I mean, there's people are still dying. The protests are still happening. There's people out of work. Like, it's mostly negative because the narrative online and the narrative from the TV is all negative for the most part right now. But Paul, I want to get into your story if you're open to it, because it's fascinating to me around how we got to the current state in terms of who you are today. So let's go back to, when was it? Mid-2000s, 2006, if I have this right. Is it Aquinas College?
Yep, Aquinas College.
Okay, so
you will pronounce it right.
All right, so Bachelor of Science, Business and Communication, dual major. Did you think you'd be getting into sports and sports sales? What did you think you'd be doing when you were getting ready to start your career?
Man, so I had no idea that this was even a thing and a part that you could make a career up until my junior year. And like every professor is saying, you know, you got to get an internship. And I think I was like a lot of college kids that are sports management degrees, which I wasn't even at the time. It's just business communication, like you said. But knowing I wanted to get into sports, I thought it was going to be sports marketing. That's the only thing I knew about. That's all you see in the movies and TV shows and all those things. So I applied for the West Michigan Whitecaps food and beverage internship. Did not get a call from them about it. And from what I was told, my resume was passed around a little bit. Steve McCarthy, their VP of sales, called me and said, I want to come in for an interview. Now, I'm, you know, a lot of people, when you hear sales, you think it's, you know, door to door or calling down the phone book. And when he called me initially, my mind was like, it's probably not something I want to be involved with. But I asked him a couple of questions. I was like, you know, does it pay still? Is it yes? I still get the apartment for free this summer. He said, yes. And I do still get to eat all the food and beverage in the ballpark while I'm working. He said, yes. Like, all right, yeah, I'll come check it out.
It was
a thing that changes everything for me. You know, I'm not the biggest baseball fan. You know, I'll go to a game and have a drink and enjoy being with friends and whatnot. But I was horrible at it playing as a kid. I don't watch it on TV. But again, it checked a lot of the boxes and it gave me an experience. So I dove in and, you know, Carrie Troy, my first ever boss, who's actually a good friend of mine now. She's down in Kansas City now, but made a lot of mistakes. I had no idea what I was doing. A little bit of training and trying to fumble my way through it. I realized that, you know what, I kind of actually enjoy talking to people.
Yeah.
Didn't mind calling the stranger out of the blue and having a conversation. At the end of the day, what I realized quickly is that you're providing entertainment. You're getting people to come enjoy a game with their friends and having some drinks and having some food, whatever the case may be. So that summer was very pivotal for me. I learned a ton. And coming out of it, I realized, you know what, if I can do okay at selling baseball, why not look at what my passion is and get involved with that? So throughout my senior year, I had an internship in the admissions office. I was shouting to schools, talking to high schoolers about coming to Aquinas. I was student ambassador there, so I was already kind of fine-tuning that conversation piece. And then I applied what used to be the NBA career fair they had back then, where you had to apply to go. You had to be accepted to go, and all 30 teams are there for 3 days. One of the things I always tell anybody that asks is that I think everything happens for a reason. And I was injured at the time. I've been trying to play. I played basketball there for 4 years. And my senior year, I had just been diagnosed with a stress fracture in my back. And I've been trying to play with it all season and didn't understand why. I just couldn't do what I used to do. Kind of find out there was a crack in my back there in the L5 lumbar. So I wasn't playing normal minutes. You know, I really had lost a lot of the rotation I normally was. And I was still trying to play with it just because I didn't want to miss out. And our team had just been accepted to go to the Nationals, the national term for the first time in school history. So the career fair is right during the weekend before we left for the Nationals. So I had to go to my coach and say, hey, I want to miss the last three games before we go to the Nationals to go to this career fair. Yeah. Now, if I would have been healthy, if I had been playing my normal minutes, if I would have been in normal rotation, I think that would have been a much harder conversation. But because, you know, I wasn't, you know, what I normally was and for the team, in my opinion, I think he's a little more okay to do that. So I went down there. Craziest thing I've ever seen at that time up in my life. Talked to every team possible. You know, you really got to sell yourself. And I think out of her 1,200 that applied, they only took 170 people. But it was because of my internship that I believe is what got me in the door to do that. And from that, you know, on the bus down to Nationals after those 3 days were over, started getting calls from teams, which was an awesome moment. Handful of teams offered, and I ended up going to Cleveland to get my career because as I was talking to the directors and managers and higher ups around the different teams, you know, you asked them too, like, where'd you get your start? How did you get your start in the career? And there were a good number of them that said, you know, I started in Cleveland. So I figured put two and two together. They got all these guys and women that are doing higher level positions, and they came from there. They got to be doing something right. And had the pleasure to join under Bob Civic's team and Mike Andreyko and Chad Esses them in Cleveland after 2 weeks after graduation, took the U-Haul down there and got things started.
All right, so you're with the Cavs in a sales role. I think it was funny that you said, I didn't even know this was a thing that I could, have a career as a non-basketball player for a basketball team. So here you are in sales, and you're with the Cavaliers at a time when, like, LeBron's in the younger time of his prime. Like, he's, like, right in there. That must have been a really cool, fun time for you. First real kick at the can working for the association, and here you are with like all eyes on LeBron. What's this guy going to do? Is he the next MJ and everything else? And so talk to me about that. That must have been a cool experience just working for that organization at that time.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was kind of one of those things where, you know, Cleveland, the Cavs, they were reshaping the city because of LeBron and what the team's success was. And then just believe what could come. At that point, nobody knew how great he was going to be or what, you know, the organization is going to be able to do for the area and the state of Ohio. But as a 22-year-old kid coming out of college, like, there was nothing better. Like, at the end of the day, I was so excited. Like, I miss leaving home. I miss Michigan, of course, my friends, my buddies and everything. But I was actually okay with it because it allowed me to really focus on it because I knew this was going to be hard. That's something I tell any college kid coming into this is that, you know, prepare yourself mentally. It's going to be the hardest year of your career. Because that's what somebody told me in the very beginning of it. And, you know, Paul, I was – you know, my story is that I was the complete late bloomer out of that team. There were 15 of us that came and started June 1 there in 2006. And, you know, for the most part, inside sales and sales associates, you're pretty heavily judging what you're selling as far as a full season ticket. That's where you get your name on the board back then. That's where you're starting to really make the money, where people are looking at you like, does the kid have it or not? And I was dead last out of my class of 15, not by like a day or a week, but like a month and a half. So you want to talk about like a real gut check opportunity. Like, that was it for me. I'm pretty early on. But, you know, Bob Civic, my boss at the time, yo, just kept telling me, like, you sound good. You're doing all the things we're asking you to do. So believe in the process and do that. And then things kicked off. And then once things kicked off, that's when you could really like enjoy what was going on, because the season hadn't happened yet. Hadn't seen a game, hadn't worked a game. Didn't really understand the impact that we could have on this. And then that first game hit and you got the crowd of 20,000 plus, which was then the queue, Quicken Loans Arena. And then to see the impact he was having, the roar when he came out, like it was unbelievable. And you're right. He was a young LeBron, you know, he was still a star in the league and one that everybody wanted to see and watch and had predictions on him, but watching his evolvement and everything he did as a player, the responsibility he had at that age, and I think he's only a year younger than I am, was pretty powerful, like extremely powerful for me. And just helped me feel even more motivated that, you know what, I could put butts in seats. And this is what I felt kind of when I was active sales, I was that my responsibility to this team is to put the butts in the seats, provide the best home court advantage, which will help the players, which will help us win the championship, which we all are chasing as our career. So it was awesome. He evolved. I didn't realize the impact that a player could have on a city, on a state, and really a country, but getting a chance to see that firsthand, it was very powerful, very cool to watch his evolvement and everything going on. So it was an amazing 4.5 years there.
Paul, talk to me about your decision to move on. Why did you go back to Detroit?
It's a great question. couple of different answers part of coming to play with that. One, you know, I was there for the decision, which, you know, I love telling that story over a drink with anybody because it was one of the crazier days or nights, I should say, of my life. And I'm very glad I went through it, but obviously remember like it was yesterday. So LeBron left. Are you still with me, Paul?
I am.
Okay, good. Something was popping up here on my computer. Sorry about that.
It's all good. I was going to ask you if you were actually there or not, because I know you left around 2010 or so, but my timing, I wasn't really sure. I was around 2010 when he moved on. And so again, so you were there still with the organization when this happened.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an insane night for all of us. So yeah.
Now, Paul, honestly, were you out there burning jerseys with everybody else or no?
I'll tell you, Paul, I was in so much shock that I couldn't even comprehend. So literally the quick version of the story, we were all in the office for obvious reason. Like I could tell you, but I had a large amount of people that said, hey, when he says I'm back, run my car for X amount of dollars for these seats. So my cart was full of seats ready to go.
Right.
And I really was, my desk was here. The TV was behind me. and I was turned around, but I had my hand on the mouse just ready to start clicking away. Cause we literally had no idea. Like none of the sales rep did. You know, I heard the higher ups found out, as we all probably read by now, not too much earlier than that. And we were ready to make some serious money, celebrate and really just go crazy for a week, which is getting these seats sold. So we said the infamous words, you know, taking my talents on the South Beach.
Right.
No, nobody said a word. We didn't know what to say. Like literally there were probably 30 of us in the office. I just shut down my computer and walked home. So I was a block and a half away from the arena at the time. And I walked home. And of course, as you can imagine, I'm getting blown up on my cell phone from all my friends back in Michigan, family, anybody you can imagine that, you know, knew I worked there and I was in pretty good contact with. And I didn't answer. I didn't want to talk to you. I couldn't understand it. And there were thousands of people downtown. And then that was the crazy part, is that there were so many people ready to just go crazy and celebrate, but it was dead silent, like very eerily silent. Nobody knew what to do. By the time I got back to my apartment, that's when people started like waking up and like getting really upset about it. And I didn't go anywhere yet. And I still didn't know what to do. I was just kind of pacing back and forth in my apartment, like how and why, all the questions you can imagine. And then some of the other sales reps said, hey, we're just going to go meet at this bar. And we all met at a dive bar, and we just kind of sat there and had a drink. It's like, I don't know what we're doing, what to do, voice every frustration.
Yeah.
Then the Gilbert email came out that he sent out to the press. Then we got really excited and almost rallied together and had a few more drinks. And then we came back in the office the next day. It was crazy.
Wow, that must have been, yeah. I mean, crazy is the right word there. And so did that factor into your decision to leave the organization, or was there something else drawing you to Detroit again?
Yeah, well, the draw was, the main thing was that my girlfriend, who's not my wife, she was in Detroit. We've been dating for quite some time. We were trying to find positions for her in Cleveland and hadn't found the one that was quite right for her. So when LeBron left, like I always tell people, like I didn't leave because he left. But when you're 22, 23, 24, 25, making that kind of money because of the success of the team and the rise of the organization within the city, you know, I'm not gonna lie, like the money was great and we were having a great time and money's flying, you're going places, playoffs are happening. You kind of get blind a little bit to like thinking about, you know, what your focus is, which is your career. So when he did eventually leave, the smoke kind of cleared a little bit. The position I wanted, I found out pretty early on, like I wanted to get into management. Like I enjoyed helping to teach the younger reps that were coming in every year about what this world is about and tips of success and how to position themselves to do better. And the management first opportunity I had to interview for it, I didn't get. So I didn't get the inside sales manager position that was available earlier that year. Wasn't salty about it. I understood, okay, it wasn't my time and maybe it wasn't supposed to happen here. So the fact that my girlfriend was in Detroit, my wife now, she's in Detroit, I put out some feelers because there are a lot of people, a lot of my close friends are starting to get other positions and leave as well. And my mentor, Mike Andreyko, contacted one of my other mentors, Sarah Daniel, who was with Detroit in the Red Wings at the time. And because I had read that they were looking for a group sales position. Now, even that was a lateral move. But then I quickly learned after talking to Sarah on the phone that they were actually starting a group sales department, because what was happening with the Red Wings was Tom Wilson, John Krzyzewski and crew had just came down from the Detroit Pistons and the Palace, and were coming to the Red Wings to help what is now end up being the District Detroit, Little Caesars Arena. And they're playing for all those things. So a powerful move, and a lot of key players from the Pistons organization have just gotten there. And they're, you know, we're kind of rethinking what the Red Wings have been, because as you know, I'm assuming, I'm making a huge assumption, but as a Canadian, you understand the Red Wings and the history and whatnot. And I knew of them, but didn't really understand the depth of it, right? Because I wasn't a hockey fan. I didn't really get the sport, to be honest with you. But to help start a department, in my mind, career thinking was that this is kind of the next best thing to being a manager, if I can help kick this department off the ground. And so talking to Sarah, knowing what they were trying to do, it really made it pretty easy for me to take that lateral move and make the jump, and very, very hard to leave Cleveland. My parents actually moved to Cleveland at that time. My mom's from Cleveland originally, and you know, ended up being an awesome opportunity. And I was, everything's kind of history once I got to Detroit.
Well, you know, Paul, you certainly can insert the Canadian stereotype of a hockey fan over here. Absolutely. It applies to this guy. That's for sure. And so how long did you end up staying with the Red Wings?
So I was there 7 years.
7 years. Okay.
Yep, 7 years. Yep.
So 7 years. All right. Same position, multiple positions?
A handful of them, actually.
Okay.
I came in as a group sales account executive with Kristen. We met helping kickstart that department up. Then as the regime kind of shifted a little bit with Tom and Giz and Sarah Daniel, you know, they're repositioning some things. And then the inside sales manager position that I always wanted became available. So I tell you what, I've never prepped so hard. I've never put a bigger business plan together of going at it, because like I, in my mind, I can't lose this twice, right? Okay. Interviewed, you know, my tail off for it, and was blessed enough to get that opportunity. So kind of got to reset the whole inside sales program at the time. They had one, but I got to reshape it to what I thought would be the most productive and be able to get stars and produce some serious talent out of that. So from group sales account executive went to inside sales manager. The group sales team continued to flourish and grow and do bigger and better things. So eventually within a year or so, they added group sales manager under my title as well. So I was inside sales manager and group sales manager. Was with that for another couple of years as we continued to do good things, and we're nearing the end of Joe's Arena, going into Little Caesars Arena. They eventually added the account executive team under me as well. So for a couple of years there, I can't remember exactly how many, but I was director of ticket sales, where I oversaw all three compartments of ticket sales responsibility, from group sales to the account executive senior level team and the inside sales team for, at the time, the Red Wings are moving into Little Caesars Arena.
Didn't they win a cup during your tenure there?
I wish. No, they...
It was just before, was it?
It was just before, a couple of years before I got there, when they were in serious contention. They're still great. They're still riding the 25-year playoff streak, which was awesome. And that's when I really started to feel like what hockey is and how serious it is to so many people. In my opinion, like... I will tell anybody, I think playoff hockey is probably the best playoff atmosphere in sports. I had no idea. So like to be there, to be able to see that was amazing. And I truly enjoyed it, but no, they didn't win it. The team declined a little bit, you know, during my 7 years there, and kept, you know, kind of going back to the position that they are right now. But to see some of those greats, you know, Nick Lidstrom and Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk and them, they were kind of the last of the old, the Hall of Famers that really the namesakes of Detroit Red Wings for a long time. It was awesome to see. So I was very glad to be there at the time.
Paul, did the Bucks find you or did you raise your hand?
The Bucks found me. They had some feelers out, working with some companies on doing some searches for what they needed. So I was contacted by a headhunter from the Bucks. And, you know, I already knew a little bit about the Bucks because I'm sure like a lot of professionals do, we kind of keep an eye on what's going on around the industry. So I seen when they had new ownership kind of come in and take over. I had seen that Peter Fagan had come here. I'd seen that my boss, Jamie Morningstar, had come here. And Jamie, I had known about for a very long time. We have a very close mutual best friend. And I could have swore, like when I was interviewing with her, that I thought we had met, but we'd heard so much about each other. It felt that way. So I already kind of knew, you know, good things were happening, and then slowly saw that Giannis kind of become who he was. And I honestly didn't know about the arena until I started doing the research before I came for the interview. I was like, oh, okay, well, that kind of makes sense why my name might have popped up in it. But it's one of those things, knowing what they had already put in place and the things I had read earlier, and the fact that my goal was always to get back in the NBA, because I love where I got my start. I'm a hoops junkie. But even more than that, I kind of felt, in my opinion, that NBA has always kind of set a good standard as a business practice. They always seem to be ahead of it. They always seem to be, you know, trend setting in a lot of different ways. And now my end goal is always to get back in the league. So to have that opportunity to even discuss it, I was like, I can't not talk to them and hear them out. And, you know, I had the phone conversation and got here and was blown away. It was great.
You know, Paul, I can't thank you enough for freeing up the time. I mean, we're in the middle of the playoffs right now, a unique bubble. Can you believe we're in September? We're talking about playoffs in itself. That, I mean, what a year for NBA in the playoffs. But I always like to close with this. If anybody was listening that you wanted to share some advice to, maybe some advice that's worked for you, in your life, profession, both, whatever it might be. If you had one piece of something that's worked for you, anything you might want to pass forward and share with the audience.
Yeah. You know, probably the biggest thing, Paul, especially in the world that we're in right now in this year, 2020, it's never been more evident to me that you just had to be good to people. I have a firm belief that the mentors I have, the people that have given me advice, that have opened up doors for me, that have given me a chance, period. It'd be hard pressed to find anybody that could say I wasn't at least good to them, and at least a good person and friendly and open to a conversation and taking advice. So I'll say that anybody within their career, whether they're just beginning, been in it for years, you had to continue to be good to people because you never know who you're talking to and you never know what they're going through. I mean, really, you never know what they can help you out with eventually in the long run, because you make a good impression on anybody, somebody's going to remember that. Whether they remember your name, your face, who you worked for, something's going to resonate with them. But they just remember, you know what? I talked to that guy the other day. He just smiled at me. At the very least, like, you could change somebody's day by doing that alone. And nowadays, like, it's never been more evident to do so. So professionally, personally, at the end of the day, if you're just a good person and you talk to people like human beings and treat them in the golden rule, right, treat them how you want to be treated, the possibilities are endless. And you're going to continue to have people that want to interact with you, help you out, be a part of your life, and feel fortunate that you're a part of theirs.
Well, that's great advice. So listen, Paul, I do have one more question for you. So listen, when Giannis leaves and signs with the Raptors and comes to Masai, are we still going to be friends?
I'll need a little bit of a break, maybe some conversation. No, I hope I don't have to go through something like that twice in my career. So I'm feeling that the odds are with me this time. But no, we love him here. We're going to fight like heck to keep him here. But yeah, we might need a little bit of a break, but we'll be all right.
All right. Well, I'll make sure that I give it some time before I reach back out. Well, listen, Paul, I can't thank you enough for being here. I've really enjoyed you taking the time to share your story. Thanks for being here, man.
Paul, I appreciate it. It was a pleasure.
You bet. All right, everybody, let's wrap this one up right now. Thanks so much for freeing up the time. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result we'll tend to get. All right, we're out of here. We'll do it again. And for my guest, let's go Bucks, but let's go Raptors.